And welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z flying solo today. The Natural Nurse has the week off. And I'm really excited to do some really interesting radio program, a lot of research that I did on a condition known as delayed onset muscle soreness. Delayed onset muscle soreness. So we'll get right into that in a bit. But first, a couple of announcements. First of all, if you're in the New York area, on October 1st, we have our Chinatown Exploration and Walk, where myself and the Natural Nurse take people through the heart of Chinatown into the most interesting apothecaries to study traditional Chinese medicine, particularly focusing on herbs. But, you know, in the Chinese materia medica, there's a lot more than herbs that they use. They use the animal parts and caterpillars and shark fins and many minerals. And it's just fascinating stuff. And you'll learn where the best apothecaries are and sort of take a nice day in a beautiful exotic place, or what seems like an exotic place, right in Manhattan. So for more information, you could get in touch with the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com or shoot me an email at drznaturally@gmail.com. And we'll give you more information on how to register for our Chinatown Walk October 1st. Also, we have on September 17th our annual botanical medicine deep dive into medicine making, identification of botanicals and collection. And that's going to be held in Westport, Connecticut at Gilberti's Herbs. You can Google them, Gilberti's, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-I-E-S, and get more information. It's right on their front page. Excited to do that. This is where you at. We will actually take you out and you will learn literally 50 or 60 plants that grow in the Connecticut area, of course, and what their medicinal chemistry is, their folklore, the scientific studies, clinical research, and hopefully you'll be able to take a lot of pictures with your apps and identify these plants. And then we take a lot of these plants back into the shop, and there we begin our medicine making workshop, and we make different medicinals. We explain how medicinals are made professionally, like in a herb shop. You know, I'm a consultant with several herb companies, professional herb companies, and understand how botanical medicines are manufactured and all the strict manufacturing steps that come in identifying the plant and making sure there's no bugs or toxins and heavy metals, doing mass spectroscopy and gas chromatography and things like that. Then onwards to the identification of the plant, making sure it's the right plant, with botanists there that can, you know, sometimes herbs arrive all mashed up and dry, and they don't resemble what the herb looked like in the wild. So we have expert botanists, you know, on hand in many phytopharmaceutical places to really look deep at the molecular structure of the plant, or at least the gross anatomy of the plant when it's dry, to make sure it's the right plant, because many times adulterants happen. You could kind of, like, you know, pretend you're gathering echinacea and put a little echinacea on the outside of the bale and then fill the inside with an adulterant plant. And there's all kinds of genetic markers now that they're using to make sure to identify the plants too. So we're moving into genetics and not just gross morphology and chemistry. Anyway, you'll be learning all about these different things, and then you'll walk away with a cough syrup, a salve, a healing salve, smudge sticks for bringing in the holidays. A lot of times we like to sage the area to start the new year, or if we move. So we'll teach you how to make that. And it'll just be a great experience. That's at Gilberti's Herbs, which is in Westport, Connecticut. And then we have our Jamaica trip which is our Eco Tours for Cures to Jamaica, West Indies. And that's coming up March 23rd of next year. But this is where we do a deep Eco Tours for Cures into the rainforest. And we also have a documentary that came out on myself and the Natural Nurse. So if you'd like us to send you that documentary, you could send us an email and we'll send you a link. That'd be a good way for us to know that you're there and listening. This is on YouTube now, and it's about a 40-minute documentary on our life's work, which is actually studying the ethnobotany of the Caribbean people, particularly in Jamaica, in the parish of St. Mary, and in Portland and other areas, St. Thomas. And my apprentice, along with the natural nurse, with Jamba of the Maroons, who was a Maroon elder who crossed over about 10 years ago. And he's gone about 10 years now, so we'll be honoring him at our next trip to Jamaica. So all that information can be gathered, and other things, on naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. So onwards with the program today. We're really excited to talk about delayed onset muscle soreness. And the reason why is because, you know, with the cooler weather, I'm not sure if you walked outside, it was beautiful out. And, you know, a lot of my patients have been putting off exercising a little bit. You know, they've been doing stuff indoors. But, you know, if they have respiratory problems and all the Canadian smoke and the humidity and things like that has been bothering them, it kind of bothers me, too. I have a little bit of like hay asthma that bothers me on those humid days, too. So, you know, we've been trying to work out indoors, but it's just not like going out in the fresh air and really starting to run or jog or walk or power walk. I mean, I don't let it stop me usually, the weather, but, you know, some people do. And now they maybe are a little bit out of shape and they want to get in good shape in the fall. And when they start working out, they end up with injuries, shin splints, sore muscles, back injuries, tight hamstrings, tight quads, and what they call fire in the muscles, or delayed onset muscle soreness. So we're going to be talking about this today. I have a lot of, you know, experience treating this and did some research because I am a dual black belt in Tang Soo Do and Kenpo Mudo Kwan, two very vigorous styles of martial arts. And as I get older, I feel like sometimes, you know, I get some delayed muscle onset muscle soreness after working out at the dojang. By the way, in Korean, it's dojang, and in Japanese, it's dojo, which is the place where we work out for karate. And I was trying to figure out, why the heck am I so sore 2 days after I have a vigorous Tang Soo Do training? You know, Tang Soo Do is similar to Taekwondo. You might have heard of that, more common, but Taekwondo is more of the Olympic type of sport that's done in Korea. But it all has these roots in the Mudo Kwan, which were the Kwans were the schools of Korea. So anyway, when you do this type of martial arts, it's like karate in Japanese, but it's very vigorous with explosive kicks and twisting of the hips so that you can really increase your power with torque. The Korean styles of martial arts seem to be more, you know, with the deadly kicks. So it does hammer on your legs, that's for sure. And you end up with this delayed muscle onset soreness sometimes. So what is delayed onset muscle soreness? Let's do a quick definition. Well, it's muscle soreness where you feel achy a couple days after you work out or have a physical demanding day. You know, day one's the workout. You have the intense physical activity. Day two is the calm before the storm. You may feel tired, but strangely okay. Then day three, bam, you feel incredibly achy and sore. That's delayed onset muscle soreness. And that's because takes time for the inflammatory process to peak and begin to repair the micro damage that's happening. And there are all kinds of white blood cells and hormones and cytokines, which are like messenger molecules for your immune system, and other biochemicals which are released by the body during this time to clean up the site of inflammation. Because when you're actually working out, you're altering the internal metabolic characteristics of your cells, and actually the skeletal muscle enzymes get damaged and they leak. They actually leak, and you end up with an increased level of oxidative stress. Like, they leak an enzyme called serum creatinine kinase, or CK for short, lactate dehydrogenase. We always talked about, you know, lactic acid, the lactate. Lactate can become lactic acid through biochemistry, through oxidation reduction. And myoglobulin, and large amounts of free radicals are produced, of which we can measure in the blood. Many times I have patients measure a marker that's called malondialdehyde, MDA, which is a marker of lipids that are being damaged by free radicals. What are free radicals? Well, they're oxygens that in the process of metabolism get generated. And when the oxygen, when O2 becomes O1, you know, two O1s, they don't like that. O1 is considered unstable, and oxygen will do its darndest to bind with anything. They actually call it a promiscuous molecule in chemistry because it likes to bind with anything it can. Now, if that's another oxygen, fine, it goes back to O2. But if it's your protein in a muscle, if it's a cell membrane, if it's something else, a mitochondria or a sarcoplasmic reticulum, now I'm getting fancy with parts of the biochemistry of and physiology of the muscles, well, then when oxygen binds to something, it's kind of like when you, if you ever put hydrogen peroxide on something and watch the bubble, the hydrogen peroxide is O3, and the O3 disassociates to O2, and then the single oxygen, O1, they call it single oxygen, not really O1, but you get the idea. And then that O1 goes to bind to, in this case, a bacteria. If you're using the hydrogen peroxide to deal with a wound, but, you know, if it's binding to your muscles or ligaments or tendons or your brain or anything like that, it causes oxidative damage. Now, hopefully we have enough antioxidants in our bodies to soak up these free radicals, oxygens, before they damage us. And so, but we can measure that with this test called myondialdehyde there. So, yeah, and so we want to make sure that we, you know, help people so that they can, you know, and give them a multi-mode treatment routine, including, you know, proper protein feeding of the muscles, proper antioxidants, proper botanicals, other evidence-based things to see if we could increase their performance and stop or reduce delayed onset muscle soreness. I mean, this is something we even see in the pros, you know. You see, I have a picture in my PowerPoint of LeBron James soaking in ice after a hard game. Well, you know, there's some debate of, we'll talk about that at some point towards the tail end of the hour. There's some debate of whether, you know, ice baths and the cryotherapy that the pros do and other people do as well works possibly. Anyway, so a little bit about the physiology of the muscles. We have these bands that supposedly are like filamentous. And they call the unit within the muscle that we're looking at is the sarcomere. That's the smallest unit within a muscle. And it's the sarcomeres that get damaged. Now, what type of exercise damages the muscles? Well, everyone's done a curl. We've either picked up a bag of potatoes or something, a book or a weight, and we've actually brought our wrist up to our shoulder, allowing the bicep to contract. That's shortening of the muscle. That's not where the damage happens. The damage actually happens when we lengthen the muscle, and that's called eccentric contraction. That's where we're kind of bringing that, we're bringing that arm back to rest to then begin another curl. That's actually where the strain happens, and this lengthening or eccentric exercise, we'll just call it lengthening at this point, it causes small-scale damage or microtrauma to the muscle fibers. The muscle fibers release excess calcium. There's disruption in the what they call sarcolemic disruption. We have problems with the way that the muscle bands work. We end up with what they call metabolic exhaustion, where our electrolytes become imbalanced. Calcium comes out into the muscle fibers. This depletes things and then creates this systemic inflammatory response, which then leads to the delayed onset muscle soreness, which is like impaired muscle force capacities. Because, you know, when the muscle's sore and ripped up like that, it's actually in a weakened state. It will strengthen eventually, but it's sore, it's stiff, there's swelling, altered biomechanics because you lost your flexibility. And sometimes the muscles get edematous, and that they're sore with movement and actually with touch. So we see that quite a bit, leading to a dull, achy pain, swelling, tenderness, and like I mentioned, reduced muscle performance. Now, this sometimes starts early in the process, like 8 to 12 hours into the process, and then it peaks from 24 to 48 hours, and then eventually it starts decreasing, but it can actually last up to almost 120 hours after the exercise. So that's a long time to have this. And if you are suffering from this a lot, that's going to impair your workout. And a lot of people, they kind of go too gung-ho in the beginning, and they end up getting injured with the delayed onset muscle soreness, and then they don't work out for another week. So part of my goal, doing a lot of sports medicine and again training in martial arts, is so that I can optimize and not be able to have these things. And I'm sure Dr. Null knows a lot about this stuff and has done a lot of work with this as a supreme athlete. Now, I have a picture of a drummer who is drumming and drumming and drumming. And after 20 minutes of playing the drums, they did a picture of his thermography of his muscles. And you should see the muscles in his, where the shins are there. They call that the peroneus muscle. That's kind of like the shin splint muscle. After you've done a lot of unaccustomed walking, you can feel a lot of pain in the front of your leg, sometimes in the calf too, but sometimes in the front of your leg. So really, there's a lot of inflammation that happens doing that heel to toe technique, which we do when we walk. And of course, a drummer will play that when he plays. So again, that calcium accumulation within the damaged muscle really inhibits ATP. ATP is human fuel. And there's something we learned about in high school for those of us that took biology called the Krebs cycle, or what they call citric acid cycle now. And that citric acid cycle is important to make energy in our bodies, which is known as ATP. And, you know, when that starts slowing down, we go from aerobic respiration to anaerobic respiration. And we've all felt that, like, you know, doing the 400-yard dash or something like that, where that last 100 meters, your muscles feel like they're in quicksand and you need to use every ounce of strength to move past this. Well, that's because your muscles have gone into anaerobic respiration. And After this intense exercise and anaerobic respiration, white blood cells come into the area, macrophages, which are a type of white blood cell, and that leads to this problem with the delayed onset muscle soreness. Calcium leaks out into what's called the sarcoplasmic reticulum. That's kind of the part of the cell, the muscle cell, and collects in the mitochondria, and kind of the muscle can't produce as much ATP. And thus, toxins start to build up there, and the membranes get slightly damaged. And this is normal. This is actually how muscle grows and actually how you strengthen muscle. All bodybuilders know this. You know, when you work out, there's a period of soreness, and many different chemicals are released, including histamines and bradykinin and serotonin and nitric oxide and interleukin 6. That's a very powerful, that kind of gives you a fever-like feeling. Oxygen free radicals and all kinds of things like that. And then the white blood cells swim to the area because there's damage. There's damage that's happening. And they call these chemotactic products, which call the white blood cells in, because the white blood cells in is to kind of clean up the damage and allow the healing process to start happening. And then growth factors are made and collagen is relayed down, and eventually you get remodeling of the muscle and you resolve the problem. But then you back to exercising again. And so if you don't have the right things, you're going to go back to the delayed onset muscle soreness. And this is going to become quite the problem with you. When they looked at the electron microscope, they actually can see the serious damage that happens to the muscles there after the eccentric exercise, really disrupting the muscle, even at a molecular level. Like I said, very problematic. Now, we'll take a break in about a few minutes, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about Chinese medicine theory on delayed onset muscle soreness, because they don't believe in using ice in Chinese medicine. The old saying in Chinese medicine is ice is for corpses. And, you know, a lot of Western-trained physiotherapists and occupational therapists and sports medicine doctors use ice a lot to reduce inflammation and pain. But the Chinese believe that the blood and the qi become stagnant, and the, you know, you can result in the fascia becoming super glued and stuck and end up in like a painful fibromyalgic syndrome by using ice. So they use herbal ice, which we'll talk about after our break when we start talking about the treatment of delayed onset muscle soreness. So we'll play our natural medicine chest and a couple of thank yous to the station and a couple promos. And when we return, we'll talk more about delayed onset muscle soreness and what you can do naturally. Stay with us.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935. But it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded, jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert...
This is Dr. Z, and you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're talking about delayed onset muscle soreness and what you can do naturally, as we all want to get in shape and keep physically fit, but we certainly don't want the downtime that's associated with excess inflammation and pain, which they call delayed onset muscle soreness. So we're about to embark in our treatments now. So first thing is that, you know, prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? Like the old adage, really important. And here was a study in the European Journal of Applied Physiology, which talked about icosa, pentaenoic, and basically EPA and DHEA, they're fish oils, right? They're found in fish and other things like flaxseed and whatnot. Supplementation decreases strength loss and limited range of motion after eccentric contractions, a randomized double-blind placebo-controlled parallel trial. And in this study, they did 24 men, and they were randomly assigned to consume the fish oil, which comprised of the EPA and DHEA supplement, with a N group of 12, so they divided in half, or they gave them a placebo oil by the double-blind method. The participants took it for 8 weeks prior to their exercise program, and they continued it 5 days after the exercise. With that group, they did all kinds of things, like blood tests afterwards, looking at the serum creatinine kinase, myoglobulin, interleukin-6, and tumor necrosis factor alpha levels in the blood, assessed 1, 2, 3, and 5 days after the exercise routine. And what did they do? They did 5 sets of basically curls. And they looked at different parameters, subjective parameters, soreness, et cetera, et cetera. And they found that basically the group that took the fish oils before they started their exercise program had more strength and lost less days due to muscle soreness. And that was really interesting. So goes to show you, if you're planning on getting busy in September, you should start on the fish oils right now. And then maybe by the end of September, October, you could start your exercise program. Now, if you want to move a little faster, there's some other things you can do. Here's one. which looked at using black currant nectar to reduce muscle damage and inflammation following a bout of high intensity eccentric contractions, so the lengthening of the muscle we talked about. And again, the group was divided in, and they gave them 16 ounces of this very interesting high polyphenolic black currant nectar. Now, I'm sure you can probably do other things if you don't like black currant nectar. I like to use OPC rich hawthorn berry, or even goji berry, or even the strongest antioxidant that we've ever encountered, which would be astaxanthin, that has one of the highest ORAC values, which is the ability to gobble up free radicals and destroy them. And there's even a tincture, which is called dragon's blood. Dragon's blood, which comes from an interesting tree from South America. Sangre de Drago is the name of that in Spanish. So those are very powerful, probably even more powerful than this black nectar, currant nectar. But actually, the black currant nectar seemed to really help in the group. They did the same types of things. They looked at soreness. They looked at the parameters of inflammation. And they found that the interleukin 6, which is a inflammatory interleukin molecule, one of these cytokines, was higher in the placebo group versus the black currant group at 24 hours post exercise. And they looked at the ORAC score, and they found that that was better because they were consuming this beverage, 16 ounces of this beverage here. But what's interesting is they didn't wait like with the fish oil, where they started it 8 weeks before. This was done very quickly. They drank 16 ounces twice a day for 8 consecutive days, and then they did knee curls, which is, you know, also pretty strenuous on the quadriceps. So that was interesting study, you know, that you can actually not have to wait 8 weeks, but here you can start a week before with a high polyphenol rich fruit of your choice. You can even use goji berries, like when we go on our Chinatown walk on October 1st. Again, you can get more information at naturalnurse.com or Dr. Z Naturally. We talk about really good quality organic goji berries that you can use. Another study talked actually about plant polyphenols, and it was the same type of setup. You know, they took groups of people, they explained to them what polyphenols are. They are, they have rings in their constituents there. They're structurally benzene groups all strung together with hydrogens and oxygens, and it gives them the characteristic color and taste of fruits and vegetables. They are powerful free radical scavengers and heavy metal chelators. And the higher the level of antioxidants in the biological fluid, the blood, the knees, the synovial fluid, et cetera, usually the less amount of inflammation a patient has. So they gave them 300 milligrams of this, just the polyphenols, not the juice, just the polyphenol blend. So this is a dietary supplement that they gave them. And they gave them 300 milligrams of these polyphenols an hour before exercise. And they found that they did okay, but not as good as when they supplemented with 1,000 milligrams for 3 days prior to the exercise. So 3 days before, get on your polyphenols. There's all kinds of great polyphenol blends out there, different brands that, you know, are trustworthy. So you can look at that. Other things that have polyphenols include, you know, green tea, grape seed extract, bilberry extract, chocolate. The another one that's very good that was very high on the ORAC value that I studied was the fruit of the coffee plant. So usually when they make coffee, we saw this in our Jamaica trip, you can actually see this if you go to Jamaica with us in March, but they squeeze out the pit of this fruit, which looks like a cherry. And when you make coffee, you actually roast the pit. And in the old days, they would throw out the cherry part. But then they found out that the cherry contains a tremendous amount of antioxidants. And now you can buy the cherry as something called coffee fruit extract. And coffee fruit extract is rated in the millions on the ORAC scale. So whereas, you know, turmeric is like 300,000, you know, green tea is, you know, a little bit more, I think. This coffee fruit extract was in the millions. I mean, it was just amazing. Again, the highest one that they found was astaxanthin, followed by the sangre de drago. And then later on, they found these other ones, these other polyphenol-rich things in the coffee fruit. Way down on the list were blueberry. I mean, blueberries are good. I'm not knocking them, and cherries and things like that, but they had way less ORAC value as an antioxidant than some of these other ones I just mentioned. So those are the ones that you really want to start using, that's for sure. So now they looked at other things like juicing. I love to juice, and they looked at beet juice. Beetroot juice supplementation on reducing muscle damage following this lengthening exercise of the muscles. And, you know, they say that foods rich in antioxidants and anti-inflammatories may attenuate skeletal muscle damage. So this study looked to see if beet juice was good. And they used a double-blind study. I don't know how they gave someone double-blind beet juice because it has such a very interesting taste, but who knows how they did it. But they gave the beet juice to the patients and then some type of placebo immediately, three servings, and then 24 and 48 hours following these 100 squat thrusts. And we used to do those in gym classes, I remember. They were, you know, you kind of squat down, do a push-up, then bring yourself up, stand up, back down into push-up position, do a push-up. So, you know, did 100 of these squat thrusts. That's vigorous, that's for sure. And they looked at, of course, pain, creatinine kinase, interleukin 6, interleukin 8, tumor necrosis factor, all the same indices that they looked at in the other studies, 24, 48, and 72 hours. And they found that the beet juice was powerful in reducing muscle soreness and helping people perform. So that's a great thing to, you know, have a beet juice after you work out and a little bit before you work out. And certainly you can add ginger to it and other veggies and things like that. Maybe you could put the polyphenols in there too and make a nice juice. Here's one actually on ginger. Now, in this case, the ginger didn't have an effect, but they only used 2 grams of ginger. So when you look at the Materia Medicas that we're trained in naturopathic medicine and herbal medicine with, the actual dose of ginger to do anything in the body is 6 to 9 grams per day. They used 2 in this study, and they found in a double-blind placebo control that it really didn't have any effect. So basically, you know, they said, ginger doesn't work, but actually it's a poorly designed study. That's why when you read studies, you really have to look at, did they use enough herbs? Did they use it long enough to really give you that conclusion that this herb didn't work? And in this case, this is a bad study because as a naturopath and herbalist, we're trained to know exactly how much of the herb that you need to get the clinical results. And so anyway, so that was interesting. I would recommend ginger, but using a 9 gram dose, not 2. according to this study here. Now we talk about other things like D-ribose, which is a powder. D-ribose is an intermediate product of used in glucose metabolism, and D-ribose can then go on to make what they call de novo synthesis of ATP, which is, again, human fuel. And so when you're in the anaerobic phase of exercise, you know, sometimes you go into this and you make lactic acid. Well, the research shows that if you took 15 grams of ribose powder 1 hour before, 6 hours, 12 hours, and 36 hours after exercise, it will reduce the lower limb muscle soreness and improve your knees, muscle damage, and reduce the delayed onset muscle soreness and accelerate your recovery. That's with ribose, where you're taking 15 grams per day, which is a couple teaspoons of the ribose. And that was what that study showed in the Journal of Dietary Supplements, 2012. So ribose is very interesting. We know about that. Turmeric. Yeah, turmeric definitely has been shown in the European Journal of Applied Physiology to reduce delayed onset muscle soreness. In 15 men, they gave them curcuma at 3 grams twice a day. So that's a total of 5 grams per day versus placebo. They did their unaccustomed exercise, and they again, same types of measurements, same types of blood work. They also checked how tight their hamstrings were in this particular study, which I thought was interesting, a little different. But they showed that oral curcuma reduces pain associated with delayed onset muscle soreness. So that's really interesting. And a lot of people are taking turmeric, but you may want to just increase your dose, making sure you're taking the equivalent of 5 grams per day if you're beginning your workout routine. And I'm sure if you start adding several of these suggestions, like say you do a beet juice with ginger and you take turmeric and you take fish oil and you do other polyphenol-rich things, like you take astaxanthin or the coffee berry extract, that they have a synergistic additive effect. And you'll actually start exercising, and then you'll be able to get into the exercise without feeling that this delayed onset muscle soreness has railroaded you and you're doing too much too soon. I mean, there is that too. Now, of course, we want to talk a little bit about arnica. Arnica is very well known as a homeopathic medicine, and Tramiel, which is a name brand of a combination of different remedies, including Achillea, Aconitum, Arnica, Atropa, Bellis, Calendula, Chamomile, two types of Echinacea, Witch Hazel, Pepar Sulf, which is a, you know, type of sulfur, Hypericum, and Mercurius, along with Comfrey. So that's the Tramiel. And they all that helped with the pain, but it didn't seem to change other parameters of soreness, although it did seem to reduce the white blood cells coming to the area, to which actually is part of the immunological things that release these cytokines. So maybe that's how homeopathy works. And I thought that was very interesting. That was an article. I don't have the reference here, but it was published in 2015, The Effects of Tramiel on Exercise-Induced Muscle Damage in Healthy Subject, a double-blind study. So they used a dummy medicine. And then this was Tramiel tablets. It wasn't like lotion. Now, arnica, if you just want to use arnica, that definitely helped with pain, but it did not help with some of the blood markers, which was interesting. So arnica was very effective for pain. This was called The Effects of Topical Arnica on Performance, Pain, and Muscle Damage After Intense Exercise. So Again, Arnica, very good to get. There's Arnica gel that you can get at the health shop, on the internet, whatever. It definitely helps with pain, but it didn't seem to help the parameters. Now we have other physical medicines like the cryotherapy. Now, a Cochrane analysis, where they look at a lot of studies, showed that cryotherapy, doesn't reduce the delayed onset muscle soreness, but really helps with pain. So this was a Cochrane review by Costello et al., whole body cryotherapy in athletes. Didn't seem to change the parameters, but it certainly made them feel better soaking in. I think they soak in the chamber for a couple minutes, 2 minutes, and it's really cold. So cryotherapy. Now they did a study on ice massage, and they found that it was actually contraindicated in delayed onset muscle soreness. Now I know a lot of people in the physical medicine world, whether they're, you know, chiropractors, sports medicine docs, osteopaths, physical therapists, et cetera, which still recommend ice massage. But this study in the Journal of Athletic Training, 1992, said that it was not very good. And that's kind of in line with, it feels good, but it did not really overall help. The conclusion showed that the use of ice massage is not effective in significantly reducing symptoms of delayed onset muscle soreness. And it said the pattern of the data suggests the use of ice in the treatment of DOMS may be contraindicated. And that's exactly what the Chinese say. Now, on the other side, there was another study that showed that it was helpful. So, I think ice is up in the air. I'm sure if you use a little bit of ice, but or do contrast hydrotherapy, that would be okay. But, the ice is up in the air. So we looked at cold water immersions and whole body cryotherapy. Heat should not also be used, too. Heat made it worse, too. Things like foam rolling, et cetera, was good towards the tail end of the delayed onset muscle soreness, but not early. But things that really worked well were topical menthol, especially with pain, and massage. Massage was one of the best things, reducing delayed onset muscle soreness by 30%. And this was in the Journal of Athletic Training, 2005. Where they looked at delayed onset muscle soreness, and they used, a little bit of massage immediately and 30 minutes after exercise, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 10, and 14 days post exercise between a control and massage. The control group just got kind of touchy feely massage, and the other group got sort of a more deeper massage, not too deep, but sort of deep. And they found that massage was effective in alleviating the DOMS. More of the deeper massage, but it had no effect on the muscle function, which I thought was interesting. Proteolytic enzymes like bromelain, this is something that has been purported by many scientific studies, and that definitely worked too. Now, these have to be taken between the meals. So this would be like chewing a bunch of papaya enzymes or taking bromelain or ficine, which comes from the figs, eating some figs maybe after the, but they showed that using these 5.8 grams per day of the proteolytic enzyme, and they used bromelain and papain, was very helpful for delayed onset muscle soreness. Lastly, amino acids, before we end the program here. So amino acids are really cool. They've been known to be used by bodybuilders and people for a long time. in the repair and building of muscle. So is there any research on this? And so leucine, which is one of the branched-chained amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, valine, but leucine particularly improve muscle protein synthesis and help soreness after exercise. So this is, they used about 3 grams of the leucine before and then after the exercise, 30 minutes before, and then they did 10 minutes after. And that was all they did. And they found that that amino acid really decreased pain and reduced muscle soreness. So that was really interesting. There's other amino acids like citrulline's very good. Citrulline is a nitric oxide inducer and really expands the blood vessels to really improve circulation and oxygenation. So if you take a little bit of this citrulline before, and this they took citrulline during a half marathon race. So that was interesting. They put it in watermelon juice, which has natural amounts of citrulline. And they found that they said watermelon's a rich source of citrulline, which improves exercise performance. So we wanted to evaluate watermelon juice enriched with 4 grams of citrulline per half liter in physical performances after a half marathon race. They did a randomized double-blind crossover trial where 2 hours after they drank this citrulline or placebo, they performed two half marathon races. And they looked to see, you know, again, muscle soreness, creatine kinase, lactate dehydrogenase, et cetera, et cetera. And the conclusion showed that a single dose of this watermelon juice enriched with L-citrulline diminished muscle soreness perception 24 and 48 hours after the race and maintained lower concentrations of lactic acid after exhausting exercise. So citrulline, that's one of the things I take before karate is I take citrulline, you know. And then another one that seems to work is, of course, glutamine, which is another one of those amino acids that many folks use. Carnitine, they looked at too, and they found that carnitine also affects markers of recovery, and carnitine helps you break fat down and bring it into the mitochondria as a fuel source. So if you start on the carnitine early enough, because they had to start early in this study, you'll keep that Krebs cycle going. Even if you go into anaerobic respiration, you'll have that carnitine to draw on and the fats there. There's one called beta hydroxy beta methyl butyrate, but I don't like the way I feel on that. So, and another one called beta alanine that makes you feel kind of buzzy and gives you paresthesia. So I would avoid beta alanine, even though there are some good studies that show it works. It gives you weird, weird paresthesias, and patients have complained about that. So I'm glad I learned about that early on in the thing. And glutamine supplementation also seemed to result in faster muscle activity during this exercise there. So the branched-chain amino acids seem to be good. Glutamine's good. Carnitine's good. And a lot of those herbs were really good too. So how do we summarize and put it together in the last minute here? Well, you know, you want to use, after a vigorous workout, use massage, take your amino acids, maybe take some arnica, use some menthol liniment if you can, if you want to, and make sure that you're using your antioxidants ahead of time, although even sometimes after exercise, they seem to be very helpful. And you'll be able to get out there and start exercising and kicking and doing your jazzercise or your Zumba or whatever you're going to do and stay healthy this fall. So again, this is Dr. Z, and it's my pleasure to bring you this solo Dr. Z and the Natural Nurse show. And we're really excited that you got a chance. And hopefully you took notes. You can listen to this podcast and write these things down and start trying them on each other. Remember, our workshops are October 1st in Chinatown. Get in touch with us for more information at naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. And stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye until we meet again.